Welcome to the Startup Addict Podcast. I'm Nick Swinburne. I've been starting companies for over 20 years now. I've had some big successes, like Zappos.com, and lots of failures. Regardless of the outcome, I'm still convinced there's nothing more addicting than trying to turn ideas into reality.
Welcome to episode 6 of the Startup Addict. Today we are going to be talking about failure. What is your perception of failure?
I guess I'm the one that talks about failure. Jeez, are you familiar with failure at all?
No, everything I do is never.
Has anyone
home
else
run.
Had any experience with failure?
What is this failure stuff?
All right. So failure, I think we've touched upon it a couple times in the past.
Well, you touched upon it in the intro.
That's true. Upon it every episode
every
in the intro.
Every episode in the intro.
And
lots
failure,
of failures.
Yeah, so failure, it got me thinking, especially in the last 24 hours. So, you know, we've talked about failure is not absolute. Even though a company may not work out, you learn something, you keep doing it, you come back stronger, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which I think is a valid point. But I thought what would be an interesting topic is, you know, how failure happens, right? And so they'll talk about success stories and they'll say like, oh, that was a 10-year overnight success story. Yeah. But really, it was 10 years of events which led to success. Failure, sometimes it's easy to generalize it or blame it on it just failed, you know? But usually, you know, failure is not usually sudden and it's not usually black and white. Like, it's a lot of little steps along the way which lead to failure. And I don't know, I can't speak for anyone else, but in my experience, it's not usually a surprise. Like, you're not usually surprised by failure. It doesn't just come out of the blue and like, holy shit, what happened? We were just kicking ass and all of a sudden it didn't work. Usually you know in your gut, you know, and then I started really thinking about it and I'm like, okay, so are there any common themes for things that have quote unquote failed? And I realized, to be blunt, like, it's just, for me, it's a combination of laziness, denial, and poor judgment. Right, it's not like anything groundbreaking or some deep thing. Like, it's possible that I'm just.
Do those happen in that order? You just start with laziness, then it goes to denial, then you go into like.
It could be that for me, like, denial and laziness come around the same time, and they're caused, or they're the cause of poor judgment, right? So. Even little things like saying, you know, something. I mean, at the most basic level, it's like, this isn't working as we expected, or we're not getting the traction we were hoping for, or, you know, we're not about to get the traction we're hoping for, right? Like, you start with these plans of like, oh, this is going to take over the world, and then over time, you're like, okay, this isn't going to take over the world. That's okay. It doesn't have to be a $1 billion idea. It's going to be a $100 million idea, and then you're like, yeah, well. It's not going to be a $100 million idea. Fuck it. $10 million idea is still pretty good. Yeah. And you're like, well, maybe it's not going to be a $10 million idea, but it could be a $1 million idea. Well, it could be a lifestyle business. It'll be fun.
hobby.
It's a passion project. You know? But like,
oh, now it's a hobby.
Yeah. And a lot of it's like, so in that case, what you're really saying is like, either A, I like this process more than the results and I don't fucking care. Or you're being lazy, denial of poor judgment. Or... for me, sometimes I think, oh, we've already done so much. Can't change now, which is ludicrous, right?
I think that's easy for a lot of people to do that, to compromise, because it's just like, what, like, yeah. Like what you just said.
It's easier to blame, but yeah. Really all that is it's laziness of like avoiding the pain of changing. You'd rather go through with the pain of
going down with the ship.
Failing, yeah. And then as these things change, or if they don't change, also if you're operating without a roadmap, then... it's harder to be aware of the problems because it's not like, hey, we're going to get to here and a year from now we're going to be here. And then when you get there a year from now, you're like, shit, we're not here. What does that mean? What should we do? Should we, you know, what do we change? Do we abort? Well, if you didn't have those roadmap in place, then you're not even really aware of the fact that you're not where you hope to be, because in your brain you keep justifying like, that wasn't the original. I mean, that might have been the original goal, but, yeah. You know, it's like, but the problem is, when you're doing things that don't in your gut feel right, when I look back, I'm like, oh, I still can't figure out. I'm sure we'll have something that happens today, which leads to the same feeling. So I was like, I got to get better at identifying that instead of pretending not to. But when those things happen, like a little tiny thing that you're like, ah, that doesn't seem right, or I don't want to deal with that right now, or it could lead to something much bigger, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not like, it's not just business. It's like, it's kind of the same thing to me as like sweets, right? You run around the fucking house, or I do, at night, just where's the cookies? Where's the candy? Give me something, you know? Yeah. And like, you're, the whole time you're doing it, your brain, or the little angel on your shoulder, I guess, is saying, hey, no, you don't need that. Just go get, grab some fucking almonds and orange and fucking watch TV or something like that. But you're like, no, where are the fucking Oreos?
Yeah.
Right? And then, so you're aware of the fact that you, now you want Oreos, but you're aware of the fact that for whatever goals you've set, you shouldn't have Oreos. Mm-hmm. Now, the good thing in food is you're like, all right, I just ate a bunch of Oreos. All right, I can just go, maybe I'll go do a bunch of cardio and that'll, I'll feel like those are gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in business, you can't just like, you know, eat the business equivalent of Oreos, and then there's no fucking treadmill to jump on.
Yeah.
But just, you know.
Yeah.
So what you'll end up doing is just kind of beating yourself up or making more poor decisions.
What these things that you identify when you start seeing, I guess you could say the red flags, would you say that's something like with a personality where you can actually address it in terms of like when you can actually admit to yourself that something isn't working?
Yeah, so I don't know how other people think, but I know looking at it, I'd be surprised if there was ever a time I wasn't aware of the fact that like something wasn't quite right, right?
Yeah.
And it's, and even if the big picture, you're like, you still believe in the big plan, still believe in the big mission, but there's just this one thing that doesn't seem quite right, and you're like, ah, well, it's a small thing. The big mm-hmm. plan is still on course, but the problem is, you know, every little choice means something, so ignoring it doesn't make it go away, and it doesn't isolate it. You know, hopefully it becomes, it's possible that it could be an isolated thing that doesn't affect the big picture.
Yeah.
But most likely it'll kind of slowly snowball or become something else.
What type of examples do you have that are where this occurred?
So I guess the probably not the smallest level that they start at, but like the ones that you could think of was like, you know, Zappos, for example. There were times where I knew they needed to fire someone, right? It would have been the best thing for the company or the group collectively. It would have been the best thing for the company. There was, the downside was much less than the upside.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you have a personal relationship, and so you like, or the person's been there a long time and they've done a lot of good things. And a lot of times it's not as black and white as like, oh, they did something illegal, they got to be fired, right? It's like this, yeah, you just know that's not the best person for this, or you can just kind of see, like in a manager situation, you could see the manager's relationship deteriorating with the team underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of think like, at first you're like, well, that's the team, no, this seems to be like,
yeah,
it's tilting in the favor of like, it's affecting multiple people on the team beneath, so now it's not like a two-person issue.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to deal with it, or if you go in thinking like, I just hope that, you know, that like the person needs to go,
mm-hmm.
because people are what they are, and they're just, you know, not going to change, or maybe they're not the best for that stage in the company. But like, I would go into those meetings, either not go into them. Yeah. So just avoid it completely.
Yeah.
Right. And then I'd be like, well, I'd rather deal with a few people complaining that I don't know that well, and I don't have as much history with, than go and fire the person that I know better or have history with. Or I'd go into the meeting, like you should go to those meetings open-minded. They can hear their perspective, and oh, maybe something clicks, and it's like, hey, now that I've heard your perspective, it all makes sense. But I would go into those meetings, in these particular cases, more, just come on, give me something, give me anything to believe in, you know. And then okay, yep, you're right, you should stay. Just walk out. Or someone puts up a little fight, it's like, okay, yep. So, but that's just kind of being a wimp as a boss. And that's an example where not addressing, you know, that leads to, at minimum, it leads to a couple of unhappy employees.
Yeah.
But you know, employees don't just stick to themselves. They don't just stick to departments. So then all of a sudden it's like this, within those people, it creates the, oh, they don't care. Right.
Yeah.
They don't care. They don't, I can't complain, or I can't say anything because doesn't do me any good. Now I've put myself in jeopardy because they're friends, or it gets to another department, and like all of a sudden something that hasn't even happened in the other department, it becomes this like, oh, we can't, there's gonna be favoritism or blah blah blah. You know, I think another example would be with Ranked, which was the upload everything that's in your closet.
Yeah,
that was an example of not having, not even being able to make a gut judgment, or using your gut judgment because you didn't have a roadmap. So we'd had a launch, and but we hadn't defined like what success would look like. Like how many new users, registered users, do we consider success? Yeah. Right? We just said, ah, fuck it, we got a PR agency, and let's see what happens. And they had these ideas of like maybe there'll be millions on the first day, and we'll be like,
yeah,
you know, the hottest thing on Facebook tomorrow, and this, that, and the other. So then we launched, and it was like pretty good. I don't remember exactly, but it was, I think it was something like 10,000 registered users or something within the first like 24 or 48 hours, whatever.
Yeah.
But because we didn't know what the expectations were, and we also hadn't done, we didn't know what other people had gotten to at that point, other than the ones you read about that are like the runaway successes or the ones that didn't work at all. We didn't know like what a stepping stone number would look like. We didn't really know how to feel about it. For a second, you'd be like surprised that anyone would sign up. But then at the same time, you were like, oh man, I was kind of hoping for just a viral runaway success.
Yeah.
But if someone said, well, what would you have considered to be a viral runaway success? So I'd be like, I don't know. Which is fucked up, right? So you're disappointed because of something which you don't know what it is.
So it's because of the roadmap. You had no idea.
Yeah, there was no
to gauge what was success and what wasn't.
Yeah, like even internally, if we would have had a metric of like, hey, let's, you know, this is what, based on, I think it's all about making like educated guesses, mm-hmm. right? And then seeing what happens.
Yeah.
But that's different than like, even if we would have sat in a meeting and said, all right, listen, what do we think would be what would be considered a successful launch? And maybe the PR agency, and maybe we've done research and we said, well, these similar things launched and it looks like they had about XYZ. Even if we don't have the registered users, we could say, oh, it looked like, you know, their followers went up this amount or the number of articles or whatever. We could have had some metric to like compare ourselves to them.
Yeah.
But we didn't. So I don't know exactly, I don't remember exactly how it happened, but it felt like, oh well, I guess this isn't really working.
Yeah.
Right? And then later we launched another product. Oh, we launched ThreadLife.
Yeah.
A couple years later. Which didn't get to 10,000 registered users in the first 24, 48 hours, and it was like, huh. Maybe we were onto something. Maybe we should have fucking stuck with Rank. Like, maybe that wasn't such a bad launch after all.
Yeah.
You know, and then you circle back to the PR agency, because we use the same PR agency both times, and they're like, yeah, I don't know. Ranked, you had a great first 24 hours, and we're not sure why it's not happening with ThreadLife. It's like, we had a great first 24 hours with fucking Ranked. Like,
I should tell them.
You know, why didn't you give us any context? Yeah. Because it was just me, like, you know, on a whim thinking, eh, well, that wasn't.
Yeah.
You know.
But how long after you saw those numbers with Ranked did you decide, you know, to dissolve the company?
That was probably a couple months.
Okay.
And so the other aspect to that is we assumed that we would get a certain amount of users and then we would have like sharing mechanisms in place so then it would continue to spread that way. So what happened in reality was probably the initial thing in hindsight was better than we expected, but we weren't prepared for what if our sharing mechanisms don't make it go even more viral.
Mm-hmm.
And so we probably ended up, instead of like taking full accountability for that, being like, well, we just didn't get enough users for it to go viral, and then didn't have a plan in place for like, okay, what happens post-launch? It was just like, let's launch this thing and see what happens. What do you want, you know? So we saw what happened. Now what? You know, so these are extreme examples, and most people won't be as lackadaisical or, oh well, you know, with these things. But I just figure, you know, I could speak of, you know, for me, and then they say learn from mistakes, right? So with Dunk Contest, for example, Dunk Contest is a retail shop in partnership with the Warriors. So the arrangement is the Warriors get a percentage of sales. In exchange, they promote the store, right? So we never thought about, well, what if the Warriors promote the store to their audience, and then it doesn't make sense to just keep banging the same audience. Like, how else are we going to grow it? But we didn't, because we just thought of it as like, well, we'll get the store open, we'll focus on this and that, and the Warriors will promote it. And I know for a fact that it came up in discussions like, well, what else are we going to do to promote it? Like, how do we know? And like, well, how do we get so we're not totally reliant on the Warriors to promote it? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I don't know, right? Like, and so in that situation, I just thought, well, let's just, hopefully the Warriors will keep promoting it. We'll just tell them, hey, promote it more if you know.
Is that just because you get caught up in like the excitement of launching something? You figure like, you know, it's almost like you put those questions and those concerns on the back burner because you're like, well, I'm really excited about just getting this store open or getting this brand launched, that you just, I wouldn't say if you ignore it, but you kind of just be like, oh, that'll take care of itself.
Yeah. So it's definitely, I mean, for us, sometimes a common theme is the, is marketing. We usually spend a lot of time on launching, operating, and not a whole bunch of time on marketing, right? And sometimes it worked, like Basecamp and Burlingame worked out great. We didn't have to do any marketing, right? Nacheria, we didn't really have to do any marketing. So then it works a couple of times, then you start thinking, oh, you know, it's like the same thing. You take this success for granted and think, well, it'll happen on all these times. So, you know, the podcast has actually been, I don't know, for me, it's almost like therapeutic. Like, we listen to these things, right? And so we talked about this because I want to make, because sometimes I think, man, I listen to myself talk. I'm like, well, no, I got to make sure I'm not full of shit, right?
Like, no, I was thinking about that when you were talking about the firing of people, because you and me, we have, you know, I've worked with you before. And then we've had other, like, no, we've had examples of, yeah, like, was it when we were working on the Dragons, for example? That was one of those things where it's like the road had come to an end, and I was still relatively young in my entrepreneurial career outside of journalism, which is the majority of my background.
Yeah.
So it was like one of those weird middle places where I was like, I'm gonna get let go soon. I know this is going to happen. I know that he's not doing it on purpose. I know that he's doing it for like the, you know, the good of the brand and trying to grow it. So I left not offended by it as much as I was just like grateful for the opportunity. And then knowing that if the door opened up again, that I would, you know, take advantage of it. But it was like just reading the notes in the morning and I hear you talk about it. I go, yeah, that's exactly kind of what happened. You know, like, yeah.
But that leads to the other side of it. Right. So in that situation, so the Dragons, we had a PDL, which is a like fourth division league soccer team called the Burlingame Dragons, which we started from scratch. We ran it for 3 years. Last year was the last year. And Julio was working at Slake, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Slake was a Slake agency we had, and he headed up the Dragons project. So none of us had any experience running a soccer team. But eventually, we did part ways. That's a good example, because say you thought, oh, this isn't going to work out, right? And I'm thinking, we gotta find someone with more experience, or we need someone who can take another approach at this. But there was probably a lot of points along the way where you're going, hey, no one gave me a roadmap. I'm just going to do this the best I can, and I'm going to figure it out on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, hey, can you just do the best you can and figure this out on the fly, right? And then there's probably little things where maybe I could have either added another perspective, or I could have said, hey, you know what? You did this. Why didn't you do this? Or I was expecting this to happen and that didn't happen. And you might be like, well, shit, I didn't know you wanted me to focus so much on sponsorships. I was focusing on ticket sales. Why didn't you tell me? And then I could have focused more on sponsorships, for example, right?
Well, here's a question. So in that situation, when you set somebody up with not experience to just do the best they can, do you think that would be setting them up for failure too?
No, I don't think that's setting them up for failure, but I think not when there's little things along the way it happens to me where I'm like, I wonder what Julio's doing about this, or I should talk to Julio about this. But then you don't do it either, A, because you're like, you know, don't get around to, hey, let's connect and let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Or you're like, he's put a little time and effort into this. I don't want to make him think that I think he should have done it differently, or any of those little things. But what ends up happening is, it's like, it's probably very common, I think, in business where you like have someone and you're just like, why do they keep doing it this way? and then you go off to another meeting about something. And you never, like, maybe you read an email and you're like, what is this person talking about? They shouldn't, this is not right. And you go off to another meeting. You never tell the person, right? They don't know.
Yeah.
Or, and then a year later, you end up saying, hey, we're going to have to let you go because you've been doing X, Y, Z and wrong. And they're like, but I've been doing that for a fucking year.
No one
said I know,
anything.
It's been bad for a year. Why, you know, like,
yeah.
So I think
it falls on the responsibility falls on the, I guess in this case, the employee too. Because I'm sure there's, yeah, where you're caught up in, as an employee, you're caught up a lot in the sort of the day-to-day, you know, for the Dragons, there's just a lot going on that we were trying to juggle. In hindsight, what should have happened was a lot more communication between the people involved in the project to the point where it's like, if I was really concerned with my position and my job, it should have been higher priority to kind of take, you know, and those of us who know Nick, it's often harder to track him down and sit him down for like, you know, 20, 30 minutes and be like, hey, I need to talk about this because it concerns me and my future with the company. But at the time, we were just so caught up with the project, having fun, but at the same time, lost in the whirlwind of like planning for the playoffs and, you know, ticket sales and trying to get people out to the games that it was like, oh, we really don't have time for this. And then by the time that the season was over and it was time and we did have time to talk about, you know, the company moving forward, you know, it was, I wouldn't say it was too little too late, but it was just not the right time for those sort of discussions to happen then and there. So
even Basecamp, right? So Basecamp, as Basecamp opened more locations, the cost to open them kept going up, right? And it was another combination of telling the CEO at the time, like, figure it out, and him not having experience doing that, right? And looking around and picking examples of how people had done it, right? And being like, okay, that's how I'm going to do it. And then thinking, well, I don't know how to do X, Y, and Z. I don't want to bug Nick with this. He doesn't know how to do it either.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let the contractor tell me how to do this, right? And then,
ouch. That's
right?
A contractor's dream right there.
And so then, so then all of a sudden, it's like you have this weird situation where everyone is basically avoiding. Everyone's aware of little things, but we're all avoiding it. Like, I'm sitting there going, hey, what? How the fuck is this going to cost that much? Yeah. And then there's something in me going, well, you could ask that. And then you have to sit in a fucking 3-hour meeting and you have to dig through every little number and then you have to deal with them, you know, well, we've worked on so hard on this. I don't want to, you know, how could, I've already promised the contractor. How could you say no, blah, 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 blah. So I would decide, okay, I guess my personal threshold for pain is less for money than it is for that fucking 3-hour conversation. So I'm not going to do it. And then on the other person's behalf, they were probably sitting there going, oh my God, I'm going to get fired. This is like so much money I'm spending on this gym.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be doing this, but I don't want to tell. He seems okay with it. He hasn't said anything, so I don't want to. I don't want to tell him. Like, and he told me to run with it, so he must be fine with it. Like, but we're both aware of the fact that like, this is not the best path.
Yeah.
But you both ignore, you know, just kind of like ignoring that little gut instinct, and thinking that like just continuing will be less painful than addressing it. And the problem is, it's not. You know, and then that those little things become repetitive, and so it's. It's almost insanity when we look back some of the how for a couple of the gyms that got out of hand, the cost of opening them. But like, I guess how surprised could I be? The first one was like, what the fuck? How is this happening? That was my reaction. But then you still let it happen.
Yeah.
So when the next one comes along, it was literally like Groundhog's Day. I'm like, what the fuck? How the fuck is this happening? And then same kind of like, you know, hemming and hawing and being too, you know, either lazy or non-confrontational or distracted to talk about it, and the same thing happens again. And then all of a sudden it's like, dude, this can't fucking keep happening. So then eventually it leads to, you know, a change, and then everyone goes back and says, man, if only we could have just changed, you know, if only we would have like right in the beginning just done it a little bit differently. So everyone thought the same thing, right? I thought the same thing. The people who made those decisions thought the same thing, and we were all like, what, how did we all ignore our what we knew was not the right thing?
Everybody had a common goal, but nobody was
trying to. So it ends up costing jobs and ends up costing money.
Yeah.
And like, for what? So we didn't have to have.
I think you touched on it a couple seconds ago when you're talking about your threshold for pain as opposed to your threshold for the money part of it. And people who are starting their own brands, their own startups, you know, unless you're super well funded, in the long run, it's going to bode best for your idea and for your startup to kind of deal with the pain of, you know, either firing somebody or tweaking a process here and there, or really sitting down in those 3-hour meetings to, it's really going to save someone's business as opposed to like, oh, we ran out of money, we're done, you know. And then
It is definitely dangerous. Like I've was thinking about this. So I woke up last night from like 1:30, and I was like, oh, I thought about something for this. And then I just sat there till like 3 thinking of these random things. But like I was so pissed when I was fucking lying in bed, because I'm like, how the fuck did I develop this threshold for failure and pain? You know, or failure pain, whatever. It's like, it's ridiculous. And like, and I started connecting the dots on all these projects and like where they went wrong or stopped, whatever. And it was all, I'm like, oh my God, there's not a single one where this fucking crazy event came out of left field and took us by surprise.
Yeah.
All of them, you knew exactly what was happening in hindsight. Or you knew that not addressing something was going to have some repercussions. Like we, even not a work example was, so we're having cabinets put in our house, right? So the designer comes down, and these designers basically get paid. They get paid to design things and also to manage the project. So someone comes down to check on if they're putting the cabinet in the right place, right? So there's a wall that sticks out like 2 feet, and the cabinet is a foot deep. So she comes down, she's talking, blah, 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 and I'm talking, and then I'm assuming she probably talked to the cabinet guys. I don't know if I can talk to them.
Yeah.
I come back later, and my wife's like, we're both looking at it. I'm like, why is the cabinet, like, how are you going to see? Like, how are you going to see the TV on it if it's set back a foot from where the fireplace sticks out? That doesn't make any sense. She's like, wait, that's not how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be flush with the front.
Yeah.
I'm like, but it's only like a foot deep and the space is 2 feet deep. Yeah, there can be empty space behind it. It's fine. So we asked the cabinet installers, like, hey, why did you guys put it against the wall? They show them the plans. Well, the plans say put it up against the wall. Did you guys think that it was weird that it? Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard to see the TV, but the plan said put it up against the wall.
So we were thinking.
TV cabinet's not working.
What the fuck? So then you call the so in that case, right, it's the installers knew. This doesn't seem right, but fuck it. I'm not going to ask because it says on the thing. So they end up having to uninstall the cabinet, slide it forward a foot, which took them a lot of time and some extra materials, blah, blah, blah. And then I should have, the first second it thought to me, like, seems weird. I should have been like, hold on, why is it? Because I could have probably thought that before they even fixed anything in there, right?
Yeah.
And then the other part of it is acknowledging these things. So like when the designer came down, she's great, you know, but you know, there's circumstances, right, where you're like, what does this person want to hear? What if I admit this, what will it lead to, right? So it's like, wait, so we get charged for you to come down here and check on them installing the cabinets. Hey, why is the cabinet this far back? It's not supposed to be like that. Okay, but it is like that. I'll call them. They've messed that up. They shouldn't be doing that. It's like, all right. Wait, weren't you here earlier to check on them? Yeah. Did you notice the cabinet? Yeah, but I saw it was all the way back, but I just figured they were just resting it there or something, like placing it there while they did something else. It's like, all right, so I paid you to come here, look at the cabinet in the wrong place, see that it was in the wrong place, and be like, oh, well, and leave. Now, it made it like, you know, you get angry. So then you're like, all right, well then forget the rest of the project. So basically by all of us, like, it cost them time and money. It cost us time and money. And it cost her future money. All because, you know, none of us felt like it was our place to be like, it's a little, you know. And
weren't you talking to Chad about that yesterday too?
I might have been, yeah.
With this app that you guys were working on. Is it for where you didn't want to commit to like even looking at it anymore because they were so far behind schedule that if you started looking at it now that they want to I remember you talking about that.
It was like these developers were taking so long to do something that I was like, I don't even want to look at it or talk to them because I don't want to I know what's going to happen. They're going to be like, we're almost done. I'm going to be like, okay, cool. Yeah. Even though the window, even though the window's already passed. And then they're going to be like, hey, you said, okay, cool. So you have to pay for it. I'm like, I didn't get anything
yeah.
on time. Yeah, but you said, okay. But it's, you know, it's weird how those little things. But I think one of the problems is, so we're talking about two things, right? We're talking about identifying the seeds of failure and making sure you address them like really urgently. Like, hey, let's, I was talking to someone earlier and they said, yeah, it's like a cancer that grows. Like if you don't, you got to get rid of those first cells before it has a chance to take hold.
So you're saying sometimes it's the people that you've hired or sometimes it's the process that you've, or that you have or you don't have. I think there was another thing you mentioned earlier on.
I don't even know, like, even beyond, like, what it is, it's just as soon as something doesn't feel right, you should stop. Let me, why doesn't this feel right? Is there anything we need to change? Is there anything we need to address now before it's too late? Let's run the risk of, like, you know, having a long meeting or talking about it too long. I mean, Dennis is sighing in this podcast.
My heart's racing from this coffee.
Like, almost makes me want to stop talking about this, right? Because I'm like, oh, I don't want to talk about this anymore because Dennis is getting upset. But it's kind of the same.
I was actually thinking for those, when you relate failure or like when you see the failure, like a cancer that grows, for people that have startups, when they start seeing those things, at what point can you cut those things out or just give up on the project where you feel like it, you know, this is not going to work?
Well, I think I'm hopeful, because I don't have any experience doing it because I'm bad at it, that if you course correct or if you nip these things in the bud right when they're starting, then that increases the chances of the project working. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think there's two things. One is looking at anything you've already done and trying to figure out, at least for me, it was every single thing. It was clear as day in hindsight that I knew in advance what was going to happen. So that's one thing you can learn from it and go, oh, I was blaming it on this, but really it was, this is what started it. And then two is moving forward saying, okay, now that I know that, and I'm a creature of habit, and, you know, this form of failure has become a habit, how mm-hmm. do I make sure that doesn't happen in the future? Because even that spreads, right? Like if people see that I have a high tolerance for failure, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, didn't work out, or eh. They see that, like, I'm aware of a small detail, but, like, don't feel like dealing with it, then it's hard for them not to have the same attitude, right? It's like, especially if they're looking at, like, oh, he must know something, so let's, you know. It's like when we opened Nacheria and we thought, we don't have any restaurant experience. We need to hire an experienced manager. You kept bringing these experienced managers in, and they kept being terrible. And every time you're like, you know, we've already, like, after the first, we had went through four, right? So after the first two, you're like, okay, maybe these experienced managers aren't all they're cracked up to be. Either we're not getting the cream of the crop, or because we don't have restaurant experience, it's hard for us to understand the way they want to do things. Maybe we have a better way of doing things or a more efficient way of doing things. I don't know. And I remember we even had a conversation of, you know what we really should do? We have a great staff. We should just help some of these people grow into a bigger role. And there's still that, like, there must still be some secret sauce that we're missing. There must be some experience that we would need that we would regret not having. Really, it was probably more, well, wait a minute. If we bring someone who's not that experienced to make them the manager, that means, obviously, they're going to need help. And what does that mean for us? What does that mean for me? What am I going to have to do? Am I going to have to basically be the manager until that person
is ready,
right? So eventually we went through a couple more, and then finally it was like, okay, enough is enough. Fucking guts screaming. We've done the, you know, we should have done this two fires ago. You know, now that's what we had Jose, right? We're like, now let's, Jose, you're 99% of the way there. Let's give you this opportunity and see what you can do. And it worked out great. It was like, huh. Well, what if we would have done that fucking 6 months before?
So was that, you know, due to laziness?
That was due to laziness and, like, fear of, like, oh, I don't have time to be there all the time. But what I realized was I was having to be there all the time anyway.
Yeah.
And the stress caused by an incompetent manager and no communication was greater than, like, the stress of, like, hey, could you come down here for a little bit and just get your thoughts on this or show me, you know, what you think of this and blah, blah, blah. Those ended up being like, oh, I look forward to going in there and seeing how I can help versus, motherfucker, I got to go in there and see how I can help with this mess. You know, so that was a...
It's a way different level, different type of stress then, right?
Yeah. And I noticed that because, and there was a financial, big financial component to that, right? So when you have these bad managers and they're overspending and they have too much food and...
And you're paying them
too
more
much
staff, based on experience, yeah.
And then they're looking at it like, well, this idiot's okay with losing money, so I guess, you know, if he's okay with losing X, why would I spend like an extra fucking hour shopping around to see if I can get tortillas a little bit cheaper, you know? Like he doesn't care. And so then it's like my attitude towards that ended up, so it was the same as Basecamp. Like, if, you know, if I would have said like everything, hold on, do you really need a $30,000 wall sticker? Like, isn't there a cheaper way to put a fucking sticker on a wall? They might have been like, yeah, but I already promised the contractor that he could do the sticker, and he said it's $30,000. Like, huh. Okay, well, tell him you can't. And go find one that's cheaper. Like, go get 20 quotes, and if every single one says $30,000, then it's $30,000. Yeah. But if it's not, then don't. And then we don't have to, then the wall sticker won't be this lingering thing in the future because we'll know, hey, that's the fucking going rate for wall stickers. So I could have done the same thing. I guess accountability is the other part, right? Like, you can identify all these things, but if there's no accountability.
Yeah.
Even if I would have sat down with the restaurant manager and said, like, dude, why are you buying, you have so much more meat than you need? Or, hey, why are you buying, like, whatever it was, tri-tip for the carne asada? Why don't you buy this instead? You know, it would actually taste better and be more authentic and be cheaper, right? But instead, it's like, I don't want to fucking sit here and talk to the manager about, you know, beef.
Yeah.
So you don't. And then finally you're like, why are you letting me go? Well, your fucking food costs are out of control, this, that, the other. It's like, okay, those cases, there was a whole bunch of issues. But you could find a perfectly good person that just doesn't know one thing, or they're overwhelmed, and you could let this one thing just fester. And this could be, again, this could just be my therapy. It might not happen to anyone else, but, you know, I just think, you know, being able to absorb a failure financially has become a hindrance, right? And so most people just starting out, they're thinking, well, I wish I had money so I could do this, that, and the other. And it's like, hey, the fact that you don't have any money might stop you from making mistakes that you would make if you had money.
Yeah.
But that's probably one of those grass is always greener things, right? If you're like,
no, if I had $10 million, dude,
that's bullshit. I'll take the money and learn the hard way. And it's like, oh, I'd rather save the money and fucking start over. But definitely getting used to ignoring your gut and just letting those things happen has had a lot of. I mean, I've seen people lose their jobs. I've seen people lose money. A lot of time. And usually it's the things that you don't want to spend time on by not doing it. You end up spending way more time repeatedly trying to like justify them, you know, or fix them when they become an even bigger problem. So that was my big takeaway on failure was I wasn't expecting that. I was thinking, oh, I'll bring some examples of like, you know, a company that didn't work and what we learned. And it's like, fuck, what I learned is you always saw it coming. You just were either too lazy, too stubborn, or too busy and distracted to like fucking change it. So
what were you going to talk about with short-term memory and your eternal optimism?
Oh, I was going to say, if you have the characteristics of like being prone to this kind of failure and ignoring your gut, but then, so for me, I have all, I mean, listen, I have all, I'm not like, I'm not BSing. I don't think there's anyone that would argue that at times I'm not lazy, in denial, or showing poor judgment, right? Like I don't have
the guts to tell them.
I have those. I have those fucking things. I'm totally aware of those things, right?
His wife would probably tell him that. Shit.
But I have the benefit of having
short-term memory.
Yeah, short-term. Like I'm eternally optimistic, and perfect. I forget everything.
Perfect.
my short-term memory is gone. So instead of me beating myself up all the time over like, oh, I just did that again. Oh, I did that again. I'm like, oh, well, that fucking happened. Now on to the next thing, right? So I was like, okay, but is that just like a coping mechanism where you're, you know, saying, oh, it didn't bother me. Well, why'd you wake up at fucking 1:30 in the morning and think about it? You know, like it did bother you. It's just I decided that fixing that wasn't more important than the downside of fixing that, right? So then last night I'm like, well, that's not gonna, you know, that's not gonna fucking happen again.
Would you say it's immediate gratification as compared to prolong a slow death? So if you don't want to deal with the how it's gonna affect you now, but in the long run it's gonna affect you.
I think it's like going to the doctor, right?
Yeah.
You got things where it just bugs the shit out of you. You're worried about it. You're like, oh my god, what is it? What is that? You know, like, and then you're like, oh, I'm fucking dying. Like, look at this bump on my face. And you go to the doctor, and he's like, you have acne. It's a zit.
Yeah.
You're like, and this isn't a real example. I'm just thinking what would be a good example. And you're like, there's so many times we walk out of the doctor's office, and you're like, holy shit,
gone, right?
Like, why didn't I go sooner? I feel like this weight's off my shoulders. Like, you know, it's a weird, I mean, the most extreme example would be when I was in college. I remember that movie Philadelphia came out. And like, you know, we weren't that.
Oh God.
We didn't know a whole lot about this stuff, right? You just like, it just started freaking you out. And I remember going to the health center and you just make, I need a fucking HIV test, right? And like, you see all these people, you know, like I did when I went, what are you doing here? Like, yeah, fuck, I just saw Philadelphia get up. Oh, me too. Right? And then
everyone's got AIDS.
And then you got to go, and then you like start thinking, I just start in your head, it starts going crazy. And then you go to the, talk about not being prepared. Then you go to the, you know, you follow up to get your results or whatever. And they're like, I can't remember what it was, but you're positive or negative, whatever. But I, as he said it, I realized, wait, which one do I want? I don't even know which one I want. Like, which is the one which means I don't have it?
That's the one. That's negative. The one.
Yeah. You know, so then it's like, it's a good example of that. And then it like, it tells me, and it's like, oh, shit. But if I, so at that point in time, that was a lot of people were very worried about this, you know? And like, so there was that thing which forced you, okay, enough is enough. Go into the fucking rec center today and just get this test.
Yeah.
But you could have, nothing would have changed. Depending on your behavior, nothing would have changed with your status if you would have waited another 6 weeks, 2 months, except you would have worried about it for 6 weeks, 2 months, right? Yeah. Whereas you could just, all right, there's no fucking, it's not like if I don't go, I don't have, it's not like if I don't go, it changes the results. Might as well just go and fucking deal with this, right? I tell, so my son Luke yesterday comes from school. I thought it was funny because he had, I've always been telling him, yeah, you're gonna have some presidential fitness test. You guys gotta start doing all this shit at some point. Like, you should probably start running laps and,
yeah,
doing push-ups and all this stuff. And he's like, I don't even, when is it? I'm like, I don't know. So he goes, so they call yesterday and they're like, hey, Luke's, he goes to a workshop after school. And they're like, he wants to come home a little bit early. His legs hurt and his stomach hurts. I'm like, why? Like, oh, he had to run a mile today. And he, and I'm like, I just started laughing, right? I'm like, I feel bad for the guy. But I'm like, dude, I knew that was going to happen. So he comes, he's in the car and he's like, I'm like, all right. He's like, yeah, I had to run a mile. And it's funny too, right? He goes to just school in like shorts and sweats a lot, and that day he's gone in like jeans and a all this stuff. And it's like, I'm like, all right. And he's like, I'm like, how was it? He goes, oh, it wasn't, you know, it was hard. I'm like, did everyone think it was hard? He's like, kind of, well, the people I ran with, but like some of my friends were like teasing me because they were like, oh, you know, the ones that play more sports, they're like, you thought running a mile was hard? You can't even run a mile without getting tired. And I'm like, oh, what was that like? He's all, it made me mad. It made me sad. You know, whatever. I'm like, well, I can show you how to fucking, you know, be better running a mile. Like, you just got to fucking run more. And he's like, well, I don't want to run a mile. You don't even have to run a mile every day. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, if you want to run a mile, say you want to run a mile at like 10 mile pace, you could just sit there and run a mile and a half. You could run longer all the time, right? So that it would seem shorter. Or you could run a mile all the time, so you're just used to running a mile.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but I hate running too. That would be miserable. Or you could just go to the track and run one or two laps as fast as you can, but just not let yourself stop. He's like, Daddy, that's stupid. That's not a mile. It's four laps. A lap or two is not a mile. I'm like, no. But if you force yourself to run a lap or two as fast as you can, your tolerance for how it feels to run as fast as you can and how much that sucks will grow. And he's like, well, I don't, that's the, that's why I don't like running, because it sucks. I'm like, yeah, so have it suck for a quarter mile, just as fast as you can. I don't even want to take another breath. And you'll start to realize, all right, all I gotta do is just put my left foot forward, then my right foot forward, and like, you know, it sucks, but it's almost over.
Yeah.
Then when you go to run a mile, you run half as fast as that, fuck, four laps will be easy. Yeah. You know? Because, you know, and he's like, okay. You know, he could tell he was happy about the fact that he didn't have to run a full mile to practice running a mile.
Yeah.
But he wasn't happy about the fact that it was going to suck.
Yeah.
And he wasn't happy, and he was still confused about how running a lap would help him run four laps.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the same thing, right? It's like, deal with something really right now, right now, for a short amount of like extreme pain. Mm-hmm. And that'll avoid like long, prolonged future pain.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, I came up with all, I mean, I could go, I mean, I was a lying awake thinking of all these random examples because I was trying to think of like non-business examples. Because then I started thinking, man, it's not just work. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm a
failure.
Personally, this is all the same shit, right?
Think of a 3 a.m.
So then I started thinking of these examples like, so Saturday, I sat on a plane. So Friday night, I went to bed in Singapore. So I probably slept for like 6 hours, right? So I was lying down. Then I got up Saturday morning. I sat on a plane for 16 hours.
Yeah.
So that's 22 hours of basically sitting or lying down. And then I got home. I was fucking tired because I didn't really sleep on the plane. So then I slept like a lot during the day because you get home at the same time you took off. So I got home Saturday morning. So I just lounged around on the couch and sat around most of Saturday. Sunday, I don't remember what I did, but I sat around a lot. For me, if I sit around a lot, or especially sit on the couch with bad posture, like my lower back starts to just get tight, right? You know, it's the same thing. You know, lower back just doesn't feel right. It's not fucked up. It's just tight. Yeah. I should probably stretch it or do some exercise to loosen it up.
Yeah.
And I know this, right? Because it's happened before. And I know like, hey, back's starting to get tight. You need to fucking stretch or go do something to loosen up. But I'm like, but I'm so tired. I just want to fucking sit here.
Yeah.
I'll do that in a minute. All right, fine. So then you get a half-ass stretch here and there. And like, so then I go to the gym Monday morning. First thing Monday morning, I'm like, oh, fuck, back is still tight. All right, I'll take it easy. So I look at the thing and I'm like, fuck. I'm doing fucking, so it's like squats and stuff. I'm like, okay, because squats is a thing when my back is tight, where in the past I've tweaked my back.
Yeah.
So it's kettlebell squats, kettlebell front squats. So you're supposed to get the kettlebell in theory, put your forearms together in front of you and have the kettlebells against your, you know, the back of your arm. So you basically got two kettlebells in front of you. And I'm like, okay, well, that's going to fucking hurt because more weight in the front is going to put some more stress on my lower back. My back is tight. I'll just do it with the weights on my shoulders. So it's more like a back squat. Mm-hmm. And that won't have that forward pressure. Fine. All right. So I get off the bike and I pick a weight that's a little bit lighter than I would normally use. I'm doing everything right.
Yeah.
And then the instructor comes over, Helene, who is awesome, right? So her job is to make sure that people are doing the exercise properly.
Yeah.
And so they'll get the best results out of it. Now, the reason they want us to do the front kettlebell squats is the weight's a little farther forward. So I think it works your quads more or something, right?
Yeah.
So she comes over doing her job and says, hey, you're doing it wrong. Put it forward. Like, put your arms together in front of you and hold the weights like that. I'm like, now I have two choices. In my head, it's saying, no, my fucking back's tight and that's going to fuck it up.
And then you got to explain it to her.
But she's doing her job.
Yeah.
And so there's two things. One, I'm like, she's doing her job and she is right. I don't want to tell her like, no, because that's weird, because then it's almost like hindering her ability to do her job. But, and also like, she called me a wimp. Like, she thinks I'm doing this wrong because she thinks I'm doing this wrong because I can't fucking do it that way. I can do it that way.
The best part is that all of this thought process is happening within about 2 seconds of her.
So I go, I think I even said out loud, like, I don't know, my back's a little tight, as I fucking move the weights forward and squat down. And then as I get to the bottom of the squat and start to push up, I just feel like that little stretch in my lower back, little zing where I'm like, fuck. Right? So I stand up, I drop the weights, and I just do air squats for the rest of the minute. And I'm like, fuck. And so now, you know, but we're, you know, on the bike and we're all warmed up and I'm like, okay, I should be fine. I'm stretched afterwards. As soon as I cool down, I totally tighten up. Mm-hmm. I'm like, fuck. So now I didn't go to the gym yesterday. I didn't go to the gym today.
Yeah.
So I basically, it's like, so it's in my head, salt. I'm like, this is, yeah, no. So Jesse's like, you're coming to class today. And I said, no, back's kind of fucked up. He's like, from what? I'm like, oh, Helene made me do this fucking front squat with a kettlebell. And then I'm like, that's not what happened.
She didn't make
Helene, Helene did her job and said, hey, this is how you do a kettlebell front squat.
Yeah.
She's, you know, the weight that I was using is a reasonable amount of weight for me. Like, she didn't see any danger. How the fuck is she supposed to know that my back is tight? And then all I had to say was, like, I'm good, my back's tight, which I've done in the past for things. But instead, I do this. And so I'm like, she had nothing to do with this. She just wandered along doing her job. And,
yeah.
You know, probably then I fucking knew what was going to happen. And I just didn't feel like dealing with it. I was rather take the chance of it happening than deal with it in that split second. And I was like, this is exactly the same thing.
I wonder her thought process, though. You know, like, she sees the owner of the gym doing it wrong. She's probably like, should I tell him something? He's probably.
Maybe she'll listen to this, and we'll get her. We'll get her opinion.
He's like, he's probably going to think that I'm not doing my job if I don't go correct it.
Yeah,
do it, Helene. Do it. All right, I'm going to go do it. Nick, you're doing it wrong.
Oh, then I started thinking of, like, so it's either that, right? It's like you didn't, you ignored your gut, you didn't take a calculated risk. Like, you never checked on something. You just assumed, right? So this is probably a bad example, but now I'm in the middle of bad examples. I got another one. So I remember in high school, I don't know why the fuck I thought of this last night. In high school, in Spanish class, right? For the longest time, I had the hardest time with vocabulary, right? I don't know what the quiz was. I don't remember if it was 10 or 20 words, but you'd say, here's the 10 words for the week, and you're going to get quizzed on these on Friday. Mm-hmm. So I would just, like, look at the list. And then, you know, but if you're looking at the list, like, how do you know if you don't know it, right? You're looking at it, it says study, estudiar. Yeah, I knew that. But it's fucking written right in front of you, right? So then I'd be like, oh, well, I'll put it on an index card. So I put it on an index card. Study. How the fuck do I say study? Sometimes I probably knew it and turned it around and checked it was right or wrong. But sometimes I probably was like, I'm tired of thinking about this. And as you flip it, you're like, studiar. Yeah, I knew that. But you didn't know that. You fucking started to turn the index card before you knew, and you caught a glimpse of it, which then convinced yourself, well, I mean, I kind of saw it, but I knew it anyway. I was thinking it, right? And I would never do good on those. And then all of a sudden one day, I don't remember how, but I just thought of, like, all right, for whatever reason, I did it once, and it was like foolproof. I could always learn my vocabulary. I'd just get a page, and if I had 10 words to learn, I'd just number the page 1 through 40. And if study was one of the words, I would write study on 4 of the lines, like space them out, wherever. And then try to just have each word represented 4 times, no pattern, so it's not like in order. And then it was like, it was fucking very clear if I knew what it was, like, right? Like, I would write line 1, study. If I don't know what it is, like, I don't write anything. If I know what it is, I write it down. And so then I would get to the end and I'd be like, oh shit, look, I got study every time. Like, maybe the word's like apple.
Yeah.
That one I only got it twice. So that means that I was just remembering it from, I was remembering it the first time from looking at the list, but I hadn't learned it because by the 4th time I couldn't fucking remember what it was. And so I always knew, like, okay, once I can write all 40 lines, and get them all right, then I'm good. I already know it. Because, like, I had to prove to myself later that I knew it.
I have a funny story. Speaking of studying, in college, or was it high school, I didn't want to study the chapter in history. So I read the chapter in a tape, didn't study, just read the chapter on a tape, and then went to sleep with the tape going.
You read it? You read it and recorded it.
Recorded it, and then thought I could see how I would do on the test if I just listened to it while I'm sleeping.
Did it work?
No. I feel horribly.
That's funny. But even then, right, there was probably some thought of, like, here's what I should do to learn this, but I'd like to go to sleep. Yeah, if I do this and this, that's probably a good compromise. But you probably knew.
Yeah.
It's not really a compromise, but at least I can check off the box that I
thought I was a genius if it worked. I was
Like, oh my God.
You would have invented a new way.
New way of studying. Just read it.
Study while you sleep.
So I was like, you know, I was thinking about that list and I was like, all right, that's the same as business. So I could just be like, I could read about other things or look and be like, oh, yeah, this is about what I think the goal is going to be. Or we could, like, write down what the goals are supposed to be, talk about them, mm-hmm. see if anyone at that point has anything to fucking say about those goals. And then if we look at it, we take those goals, everyone's spoken their piece. No one's afraid of, like, that doesn't seem right to me, but I don't want to say anything because it's not my position or they're going to be offended. If we get through all that and we look at it and we go, okay, so this is what we think will happen. let's fucking test it and see what happens. And then now we're taking a calculated risk.
Yeah.
But if we all sit in a room and we go, have you spent any time thinking about what's going to happen after we launch that? No, nope, you? No. Nope. Fuck it. Let's see what happens. That's like, in hindsight, yeah. How could you possibly have done anything productive with those results? Because you didn't even know what you were hoping for.
It was a whole different type of failure than in that case, right? It's a learning. So if you do have your numbers or you have your goals and you don't reach them, then you can use the quote unquote failure as what did we do wrong? How do we adjust it? Were we totally off with our projections, blah, 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 as opposed to, oh, shoot, well, we didn't have any numbers. I guess this is a failure. Let's move on to the next.
Yeah, then you end up bagging the whole thing.
That's a one because big one thing. Yeah.
It's like having a fucking new pair of shoes that like you feel like, man, this is kind of rubbing my toe a little bit. My toe feels a little uncomfortable. All right, well then fucking like return move them. Your socks or or put some fucking Band-Aid on your do something or readjust your like retie your laces. But instead you're like, I mean, I'll do this, which just makes me think I might be the worst person at this in the whole world. Like, God, that fucking hurts. That's going to turn into a blister later. I don't know if I can bend down and take my shoe off right now. Fuck it. I'll just keep walking. God, that's really turning into a blister. Well, it's too late now. I should have stopped 10 minutes ago, but I didn't. So I might as well keep walking. And then it ends up happening is you get home, you throw the fucking pair of shoes away because you're like, this pair of shoes sucks. It gives me fucking blisters. And my wife will be like, did you put a Band-Aid on your toe or anything? Like, was it your socks? I don't know. Fucking shoes. They're gone now. I don't want to deal with it, you know?
I know we're cranking out examples, but it reminds me a lot when I do music or we have so many different bands.
Paper Sons, 421.
We actually, when we would start a band, we would all say, oh, yeah, we'll just get rich and famous, whatever. But, you know, we were working jobs we didn't like. We practiced like animals, but we had no direction.
Yeah.
So then we just keep doing all this time. And then, you know, finally when things starts picking up, people are like, I don't really want to tour. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. Then I was like, we should have talked about this 10 years ago.
You're our drummer, for God's sake. How are we not supposed to tour? Are we supposed to tour without you?
Well, you don't want to be a musician, professional? It's like, you know, but.
Yeah, so I think it's whether it's your own thing like that or you're working somewhere and you don't want to speak out of turn, or it's like there's probably not that many examples of someone following their gut to just double check something. It's not even saying like, hey, follow your gut. Let your gut overrule common sense. It's like, just stop and check on things.
Yeah.
Or stop and address the smallest issue. Because it's not the companies that fail or the ideas that fail. It's like there was failure at like some early little point and you became okay with that, or someone became okay with that. And their decision either affected them, or their decision to be okay with it ended up affecting a whole bunch of people.
Because everyone becomes okay with it.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating because I'm literally like, I can't think of an example of something where this wasn't the case. Like a fucking
front row seat to his therapy session every week, Dennis.
So now I'm kind of stressed out, right? Because I'm like, oh my God, now I've talked about this. What am I going to do?
Yeah, let's go over every brand that we have going right now.
If I do the same thing tomorrow, then what do I do?
Like, what's our plan for the Startup Addict? Yeah. Do we even have a plan?
So, anyways, well, that was
that's failure right there.
We have completely failed this episode. If you're interested in failing with us, you could always follow us on Instagram at the Startup Addict.
Yeah.
Twitter. At startup_addict.
YouTube. Search the Startup
Search for Addict. The Startup Addict. Soon we'll have enough something or other to actually have our own URL.
And subscribers.
So if you can subscribe, please. Eventually we can get our own URL. And we've actually been doing great on the on the business charts, and actually on the overall charts too in iTunes. So appreciate everyone listening. But if you can subscribe, if you've just been listening here and there, or if you've got any friends that you think might want to feel better about their thought process by listening to ours, then please refer them to us. And any comments, as always, you know, we love hearing them. And now we'll see. Now we've said we're not going to.
And don't forget about the Paper Sons. Please.
Paper Sons, April 21st at the Hotel Utah.
You want to see me learn how to play drums? Come on out.
You want to see someone fail at drumming?
Come on out.
Fail with us. All right, that's it. I can go on with a million examples, but we've already talked about toes and cabinets and God
Spanish
knows what.
And soccer teams.
Anyways, all right, thanks for listening.